Hello and welcome to today's podcast. And today I have my guest here, Dr. Kevin Okran, and I would like him to introduce himself and tell us what he does in Netherlands for his research. So welcome, Dr. Kevin. This is the Health Services Research Podcast for 2024, and we would like you to introduce yourself.
Thanks for having me. First of all, my name is Kevin Okran, as you mentioned. I'm a doctor of medicine and also a PhD candidate at Leiden University Medical Center. I do my research in neurology, mostly on Parkinson's disease. And I also work in research methods for Center for Human Drug Research here in Leiden also, where we do a lot of phase one and phase two clinical trials here in the Netherlands.
Wow, that's amazing. And so today, our topic is mostly focused on prevention, and we are going to look at prevention for Parkinson's disease. So the first question I would like to ask you, Dr. Kevin, is can you give us a general overview of Parkinson's disease? Like, what is Parkinson's disease? What are the primary symptoms of Parkinson's disease? And what are the current theories regarding the causes of Parkinson's disease?
Okay, well, Parkinson's disease is a neurodegenerative disease. So when I say neurodegenerative, it starts, it's for old people. So it gradually, the brain basically starts deteriorating and it gets to a point where it gets worse. And the main diagnostic criteria, so we have three symptoms. Basically, we have rigidity, bradykinesia, and tremors. So these are the main symptoms for diagnosing Parkinson's disease. You mentioned prevention, but I think that is a very big topic because I'm not sure it can be really prevented. Because since it's a neurodegenerative disease, it starts slowly. And to be honest, looking at what causes it, we really don't know much about it. We think it might be toxins like pesticides. So, for example, people who work in farms and then they have to spray sort of pesticides on their vegetables and stuff like that, there's a high chance these people might get Parkinson's disease, and also genetic. It's been proven that genetics for sure causes Parkinson's disease in people.
Yeah, that's quite interesting because my next question was Parkinson's is basically both genetic factors and then environmental exposures.
Exactly.
As the studies have gone so far. So I wanted us to talk more about the prevention strategies when it comes to my first question would be, how do the genetic factors contribute to the risk of developing Parkinson's disease? And the second question would be, what environmental exposures are associated with an increased risk of Parkinson's disease? Like you've said already about the pesticides.
Yeah.
So I want you to shed more light on what prevention strategies you think we can employ environmentally that would reduce the risk of Parkinson's disease in Europe and globally.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's self-explanatory because with pesticides, I mean, the easiest way is to stay away from it. Or for example, if you work in a farm and you have to deal with it, with these kind of stuff, it's better for you to have sort of protective gears with it. When it comes to genetic, I can't pinpoint the gene exactly. But then you can imagine that if your grandfather or one of your parents had Parkinson's disease, you have a higher risk of getting it. It doesn't mean that you're going to get it, but you have the higher risk of getting it. For example, my professor, he's an expert in Parkinson's disease. I'm going to tell you this story. And his brother actually got Parkinson's disease and he died recently. And so there's a higher chance he might also get Parkinson's disease. And we always make jokes in the hospital because he says that if he gets it, he's going to... I mean, in the Netherlands, euthanasia is allowed. So he says he's going to kill himself. And I asked him why, and he was like, because he's an expert in Parkinson's disease, and if he gets it, nobody can sort of better treat him like how he wants it to be. So that's what I can say about the genetic factor. But in prevention, yeah, I mean, drinking less alcohol also can reduce your risk of getting getting Parkinson's disease. Regular exercise. I don't know if it's proven yet, but these are just like these basic living healthy mechanisms. And I think on my podcast, actually, I asked somebody a question about the diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, and you know, these kind of neurodegenerative diseases start really early. It starts, it might slowly start from age 40, and it's mostly being diagnosed from 50 upwards. And the most interesting part of these neurodegenerative diseases, like Parkinson's disease, is that you can truly confirm it during autopsy when you see the Lewy bodies form in the brain, the substantia nigra of the brain. So it's really sort of complex to diagnose. And sometimes when it comes to treatment, it's for example, I do tremors. So we start treating tremors at a very, I would say, late stage, because we don't, because the drugs itself can sort of cause side effects, and we don't want to give these patients the medications when we are not 100% sure that it's truly Parkinson's disease. So that's why we sort of diagnose based on the three symptoms I mentioned, rigidity, bradykinesia, and tremor. So if a patient has these three symptoms, then for sure we can say they have Parkinson's disease. I mean, there are other non-motor symptoms that we know of, but that is not really, it's just something, I think a while ago I was at a conference and I really liked how the professor went into it because he paid attention to the non-motor symptoms that people don't really pay attention to. And these are like some ways to sort of detect Parkinson's disease at a very early stage, which is very, very important. And so that can lead to, well, I wouldn't say preventing, but it can help in early diagnosing or keep an eye for it and then sort of help improve the quality of life in these patients.
Okay, so we've seen from what you're saying that prevention is not really an option, but there are certain strategies we can put in place to lower the risk factors when it comes to Parkinson's disease. And that would be prevention of some sort. We are not preventing the disease because of the genetic factors, but we can control the environmental factors then. We can't control the genetic factors, but no. We can control the environmental factors. Yeah. So my next question is, what role do health policies play in the prevention of Parkinson's disease? Because we are looking at the environmental aspect of it now. What role do health policies play in the prevention of Parkinson's disease currently?
I think, for example, the EU has really strong policies, not only about health, but then, compared to the United States, a lot of these pesticides and chemicals are really checked. So if there are known harmful sort of toxins in these pesticides and other chemicals, it will be banned from the EU. So I think health policy really, not only health policy, but EU policies and EU laws in general sort of plays a role in sort of banning these substances that contain certain toxins that can increase somebody's risk of getting Parkinson's disease. So it really plays, a huge role in sort of reducing people's risk in getting Parkinson's disease. Yeah.
Okay. You spoke about early detection mm-hmm. of Parkinson's disease and how is the best method for diagnosis if you are able to detect it early. So I would like to ask a question about how can the healthcare systems improve early detection and prevention strategies for Parkinson's apart from the genetic factors? How are the healthcare systems currently in Europe, in the Netherlands, how are they structured to improve early detection or prevention and prevention strategies for Parkinson's disease?
I think paying more close attention to the non-motor symptoms. Because, for example, you can have patients who might have their guts affected. So basically, they can start having constipation and stuff. I mean, Parkinson's disease patients have these kind of things. But it's important to pay attention to those stuff. And also, when we draw their blood, you can see the alpha. I can't really remember how it is. It's always a problem for me to say it, but alpha-synuclein or something. We can also detect these. We can detect it in the blood sometimes, these hormones. So that can also play. Paying attention to these things can sort of help in early detection of Parkinson's disease in people. I mean, to be honest, it's really hard. It's really hard to actually give a concrete diagnosis. So early detection is really going to be a challenge. I hope your research basically can help us achieving that in the future. Maybe you might be the one. You might be the chosen one to help us do this in the future.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So I would also like to ask, do you know any collaborative efforts, maybe global health initiatives in the fight of Parkinson's disease? And what about the expert in neurology and public health? Do they have any individuals? Are there any ongoing clinical trials worldwide to help reduce the risk of Parkinson's disease?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of institutes. For example, here in the Netherlands, we have there's a fund called Parkinson Fund. They invest so much, a lot of euros, so like millions of euros, into Parkinson disease research. So they're already like a lot of institutions that are, first of all, willing to even give money to support these kind of researchers in the world. For example, even at CHDR, where I also work, there's a lot of studies that goes into sort of Parkinson's disease research. And if you watch my podcast, one of my colleagues said that he reviewed a little bit of results that it would be a great thing if we can actually stop the disease from happening in the first place. So he's kind of like working on that also. So yeah, I think there are already enough studies that is looking into sort of stopping neurodegenerative disease in happening. Also, my professor at the hospital also got 2 million euros as funding to look into Parkinson's disease. So we are looking at the motor symptoms and how to sort of detect it early. Because the funny thing is that with these patients, we only assess them when they come to the hospital. And they come to the hospital maybe once every 3 months. And
yeah,
or it depends. We don't really understand how the tremors in these patients react when they wake up and when they go to bed. Or when they're just like tremors in the daily life, we don't really understand it so much. So we give these patients wearable sensors to put on. And they take it home for like a week. And then it comes back to us and we look at how the data is. So, for example, we can see how the tremors react when they're taking medication, when they wake up, when they are walking. We can see all these things. And this is, for example, we are writing a paper. It will be published soon. And whatever, I can't share my findings, but you'd have to wait and see the findings. But with what we've done, if it comes out there, it's really going to change how tremors are sort of assessed in daily life in these patients. So I can confidently say that there are a lot of researchers going on about Parkinson's disease. And I hope. And I remember like a while ago, I was also in another city in the Netherlands. And I interviewed one of my colleagues, and he was doing clinical trials in a medication to sort of stop Parkinson's disease. So, which he couldn't share her results, but I hope that she might also be able to find something. So I would say that we are on the right path in finding ways to sort of control this neurodegenerative disease.
That's amazing, and I'm happy to hear that there are preventive measures being taken place. Even though we can't control the genetic factors, the environmental factors can play a very big role in reducing the risk of Parkinson's disease. So we are almost done with our podcast because we wanted to be short and informative. And thank you so much for the information you've given so far. I just want to ask a few more questions and then we are done.
For sure, you can always ask.
You were talking about health services and how the current health services you are undertaking is going to help us understand tremor better. So how can health services then be optimized to support patients at risk of Parkinson's disease, since it's a field you are currently looking at?
I think when it comes to optimization, it already exists, because here in the Netherlands, there are centers for Parkinson's diseases. where like these patients come and then they sort of talk to experts and they share their stories. It's not basically a treatment center. It's a place where they come and they get advice. For example, the spouses of these patients would come and they'll get advice how to deal with these patients, because you can imagine that since the brain is deteriorating, it's not only the motor part of the brain that has been affected. Sometimes the cognitive part is being affected. And they also have mood disorders and stuff like that. So I think the healthcare services are really doing well, especially in the Netherlands, that there are Parkinson's centers for patients to go maybe once a week or once a month or something and talk to experts on how to deal with the disease. Outside the clinic. I've personally visited one of the centers. And the funny thing was that with my research, I would say it's really a bit far. I wouldn't say it's far-fetched from how these patients, what they go through in their daily life, but being with these patients and seeing them. I remember I saw this man. He really has problems walking. And he came to the Parkinson's Center. And then, well, the Parkinson's Center I visited has like great stuff. They have great facilities. There's a physiotherapist over there and stuff like that. So through that center, he was able to improve the walking. He told us a story that he couldn't walk. His walking was getting worse. But through the Parkinson's Center, he's been able to improve. And they've been able to sort of adjust a couple of things in his house to make it accessible for him. So I'd say the healthcare sector in the Netherlands is really, really great. And it's really improving the lives of these patients outside the clinic or outside the hospital where the patients would come and get their treatment. So it's, in the Netherlands, it's really doing good. I don't know for other countries, but I'll say it's pretty good in the Netherlands.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kevin Okran, for spending time with us and sharing to us the possibilities of prevention of Parkinson's disease. And the overall view is that Parkinson's cannot definitely be prevented, but in the genetic side, but when it comes to the environmental side, there are certain strategies and there are certain things we can put to prevent the risk factors from being increased when it comes to Parkinson's. Thank you so much for your time, and we wish you all the best in your research.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it was nice talking to you about Parkinson's disease. Yeah.
Wonderful. So we'll meet again. Thank you so much. And this is the Health Services Research Podcast for 2024. Thank you and bye-bye.